Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Second hour of Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you with us. Happy to have Trent back with us. I know you've already been back once before, Trent, since the baby was born, but you were away for a while, so it's good to have you back. Mm-hmm. Just no red herrings this hour, please. We are our topic this hour, as last, is why are you pro-choice? If you'd like to share with us why you're pro-choice, if you would like to maybe you'd like to try out your arguments on Trent, or maybe you're not exactly sure, but you lean that way and you'd like to talk with us about it, any of those calls would be more than welcome. 888-318-7884. We will try to be as civil and charitable and friendly as we possibly can. 888-318-7884. Trent is the author of many, many things, but I want to stress this one. Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love. Trent's latest book. And I got to hold it up there for the camera for all of you watching on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope. And I'll tell you in a little bit. Well, let's go to some calls, and then I'll tell you how you can get this book at a discount for the rest of today. Trent, chapter 21 in this book, Why We Protect Life. Why do we protect life? I don't want to give away, your secrets or anything, but why do we protect life as Catholics?
Well, because as Catholics, we believe that human beings are valuable not because of what they can do, how they can function, how big or smart they are. Human beings are valuable simply because they are created in the image of God. They are rational entities who deserve moral respect. So human beings, no matter who they are, what they are, how developed they are, so the moment a human being begins to exist at conception until that human being's life has ended, he or she deserves to be respected, protected under the law, and treated with dignity. And that includes being legally protected from being unjustly killed or having their life taken away from them. So that's, we believe, just in equality and the protection of life. And I talk about that in that chapter of the book with principles that even non-religious people can appreciate.
And again, lots and lots of calls. How about we go right straight back to them, because there are some folks who have been waiting right through the break. Renee in Arvada, Colorado, listening on 1060 AM EWTN. Renee, your question or your comment for Trent Horn.
Well, my comment is kind of about you were just speaking with your last caller, or one of the last callers, about the dignity of the baby's life and the dignity of women and mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And it seems that you are adamant about women that have had or women that will have abortions should be imprisoned, if I understood correctly, and therefore, because that would be the law. But, you know, Christ said that the most important things are faith, hope, and love. I can't remember, it's Corinthians 13:13, and the most important of those is love. Mm-hmm. So he was the one that kept the adulteress from being stoned, and he was the one that told the woman at the well to go and sin no more. And in my view, he was the first feminist. So it seems that your very strict adherence to the law is almost it's First Testament. It's the law, but it's not compassionate, because many women who find themselves in situations that are very stressful, and we still, and I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but we still live in a very patriarchal society. And if we live in a patriarchal society, then many of the women that go for an abortion feel either that they would be scarred or, thought less of in society, or maybe even threatened with violence if they don't have an abortion. How do you come to terms with all those things? Because I think, to be honest with you, I lean more towards pro-life, but these are the things that bother me. And it seems to me that
okay, well,
many people,
Renee,
who are pro-life
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you asked Trent, how do you respond to these things? And it was pretty clear at that point. So let's let Trent respond, and then I will let you come back and respond to Trent.
Sure. First, I would say that protecting human life is not contradictory with being compassionate. Saying that no one should rape people. No one should enslave people. No one should torture other people. No one should murder other people. A person can say those things. And no one should kill human beings regardless of how young they are. You can say those things and still be compassionate to people who are in difficult circumstances. But compassion means to suffer along with someone, not to help someone cause suffering or harm to innocent human beings. So I reject the idea that somehow because I'm against the killing of innocent human beings, I'm not being compassionate. Now, I can understand that. I agree in the circumstances that drive women to obtain abortions are oftentimes very, very difficult. Just as the circumstances that might drive a man to rob a bank. He may not be doing it for greed. He may feel like he's in a very, very difficult financial circumstance and he just has to knock over this store or this bank and get the money. One can be compassionate about difficult circumstances, but still say you should not commit a crime or harm another person. In regards to, Renee, what you said about Scripture, when Jesus spoke to the woman who was caught in adultery, he prevented the Jewish leaders from carrying out the death penalty in that case, but he didn't say adultery was right. He told the woman to go and sin no more. But that doesn't mean that Jesus thought that all the laws were bad, because a young scholar of the law asked Jesus, "What should I do to inherit the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus said, "Well, you know what to do. Keep the commandments. Don't steal. Thou shalt not kill." So Jesus upheld the commandments. You can be compassionate, but still, and part of compassion is not mistreating other human beings, such as by killing them. Finally, I didn't say about punishing people with decades in prison for having abortion. What I said is that if you kill a human being and it is illegal to do that, if it is illegal, then there needs to be some kind of legal punishment. Could I give you a story, Renee, and see what you think? Are you still with us? Do you see where I was coming from?
I'm still with you, but I'm wondering if I can just interject something before I forget real quick. Can I interject something?
Okay, that's fine. And then I have one thing I can share with you, but go ahead.
I see your point about that Jesus differentiated between different times that he was compassionate towards people who broke the commandments and people who did not break the commandments. But the fact of the matter is that it was also a commandment to not commit adultery, and he was compassionate with that woman. And I think that if we really want to eradicate abortion, we need to start speaking to the men who impregnate the women and have them hold some responsibility and give them different thought processes about what and how to conduct themselves when women get pregnant by them. Because the idea of putting all of the responsibility on the women's shoulders and then making them pay for the crime, as we're referring to it in this instance.
Oh, Renee, no, I agree with you. I agree with you that those who are involved in an abortion procedure should be held accountable. The abortion provider, whether that provider is a man or woman, a woman who chooses this procedure, and if a man is a partner with. In some cases, the woman is coerced or bullied into this. In some cases, she's not. In some cases, the man is a driving force behind the abortion, the partner, I should say, the boyfriend or husband. In other cases, he's pleading with the woman to not kill his child. So people should be held responsible whether they are a man or a woman. But compassion doesn't mean that we don't believe in upholding the law to protect innocent people. This is the story I wanted to share with you about legal punishment. So, Renee, there was a case in Virginia where a woman gave birth on a hotel room bed, and she didn't know she was pregnant, or I think she knew she was pregnant, but she didn't know how to handle it, didn't know how to handle this baby. She gave birth to the baby on the bed, and she smothered the baby and suffocated the child to death. And the courts ruled that she could not be prosecuted because the umbilical cord was still attached. Now, most people, I think, would say that that's preposterous. This is a baby. Who cares if there's an umbilical cord? What do you think in that case? Do you think maybe it shouldn't be 30 years in prison, but do you think there should be some punishment for a woman who suffocates a newborn baby?
I think that we're kind of pivoting off the original comment that I made, and that original comment was that there should be compassion for women who have had or who will have abortions. There should be a time in our history, not in our history, but going forward, a time period that we're softened. I don't know how to express what I'm saying. Where you're not just, okay, today abortion is illegal and tomorrow we're going to start throwing people in jail for it. You have to give people time to come to terms with a new way of thinking after the abortion has been legal for years and years and years.
But wouldn't you agree that, and first, I'm going to offer a clarification, then I would like you to answer my previous question. If abortion were to be made illegal, I imagine the circumstances that would arise is because a majority of people, you know, at least more than 70 or 80%, believe that this is wrong. It's murder. It should be illegal. And so the vast majority of people will know it's wrong, and that's why it has become illegal. So I think that condition will be met if it ever does become illegal, because if a majority of people think it's okay, the laws will never get passed in a democratic republic like ours. Now, second, I want to hear about the case, though, the woman, because it's very, very similar to abortion. It's the woman, the baby. She feels like she's in a desperate situation. She suffocates the baby, and it's connected to the umbilical cord, so it's treated like a fetus. Do you agree there should be some kind of punishment in that case where she kills a newborn baby? What do you think about that case?
Well, again, when I made my phone call, I told them that I was on the fence. And to be honest with you, I'm more pro-life than pro-choice. But what I'm saying to you is that we should treat those women who have committed these kinds of acts with compassion. And that just as Jesus Christ allowed the woman who was the adulteress, which was breaking the Ten Commandments, he didn't throw her in jail. He kept her from her punishment. He kept her from that. And I think that there should be a period in time where we try to re-educate everyone, men and women alike, to have them rethink and understand what abortion is really about before we throw everybody in prison. And it sounds to me like it's the women who are going, not the men. And that's not right, and that's not compassionate. And like Jesus Christ said, you know, the greatest of all these is love. And it makes me very sad because I've heard about your book on the radio and been interested to read it, but I won't read that with the kind of misogyny that I'm hearing on the radio tonight.
Now now hold on a minute, Ray. Well, we're going to have to probably go to a break here, but that is, well, hold on. I hope you're still there, but that is just, that's interesting. I have not denigrated the position you're holding, and I'm trying to walk through it with you. But you're saying that, and in fact, I said in the radio tonight, I said anyone who is involved with ending a child's life, whether it is a male or female abortion provider, whether it is a man who pays for an abortion, or a woman who chooses an abortion, should be punished. So how am I hateful? How do I hate women? Because I think that women and men should be equally held responsible for ending a child's life. Do you think I really hate women? I'm a misogynist?
I haven't heard you speak of holding men responsible for this. The majority of your conversations have been about nothing more than the baby and the woman. And I'm sorry, I beg to differ with you. And I don't think anybody should be facing prison time. And I'm a Christian, and I don't think that anybody should be facing prison time when we have to re-educate people. And that would be
okay. All right. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to go now to our break. But I would say that I have been consistent in the view that I've adopted. And I would say that this is an interesting position. I would agree that we have to change hearts before we change laws. But the church is very clear about compassion towards those who are post-abortive. In fact, I would recommend, Renee, that you read paragraph 99 in Pope St. John Paul II's encyclical, The Gospel of Life. In there, he has a special word to women who had abortions. He acknowledges that it's a painful, even shattering decision. He says that you should try to understand what happened, face it honestly, and the Father of Mercies is ready to give you his forgiveness and peace in the sacrament of reconciliation. So I would say the church firmly has a compassionate view towards those who would choose abortion, but it's not contradictory to say that we should protect human life and be compassionate, but also hold those accountable according to their level of culpability, men or women, who choose the end of life of a small child. So hopefully you think about that.
And thank you very much, Renee, for that call. If you are pro-choice, we would love to hear from you today. If you're pro-life, hold on another day. We'll be asking for pro-life callers. But if you're a pro-choice person, if that's your position and you'd like to discuss that with us, we would love to discuss it with you. Why are you pro-choice is our question this hour. Trent Horn is our guest. 888-318-7884 is our number. And we will be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett, host of Catholic Answers Live, and I'm looking forward to meeting you this September 28th to 30th at our fourth annual National Apologetics Conference here in beautiful San Diego. This is one conference you are not going to want to miss. The theme is the reunion of all Christians, and we've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. For almost four decades, Catholic Answers has been engaging our separated brethren in charity to bring them to the fullness of the truth. Join us for a lively and inspiring conference designed to help you play an active part in the reunion of all Christians. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite and inform your faith. Seats are available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
When you need answers about the Catholic faith, you need to have someone to turn to you can trust. At Catholic Answers, we take that seriously. And at Catholic.com, you'll find the answers to thousands of your questions on all things Catholic with an extensive library of audios, videos, tracks, articles, and more that gets larger every day. We've given the site a whole new look with better navigation than ever before and lots of great new features to make your Catholic.com experience one that will have you coming back again and again. That's Catholic.com with answers from the people you can trust at Catholic Answers. Visit us today.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We know that the conversation is going to get heated sometimes when we talk about these issues, but you are welcome to call, and we are happy to have those conversations. Why are you pro-choice? 888-318-7884 is the number. I have to tell you, Trent, my impression is that it's not your pro-life arguments that are bothering people so much today. It's that you follow them through to a conclusion that suggests people are responsible for their choices, and there should be consequences, even legal consequences, for taking the life of a child.
Yes, and I understand. I think this is good for us to unspool a little bit, Cy, because sometimes you can't get to these details in a conversation, that many people, including pro-life mm-hmm. individuals, have a negative emotional reaction to the idea that those who choose abortion should be legally punished, including with something like imprisonment. And I think the reason they have that reaction is they say, well, I know women who have obtained abortions, and I don't think they should be imprisoned or punished. Yeah. So this is wrong. So first I would say, well, number one, your intuition about that matter could be mistaken. It could be mistaken. Second, I would say, well, why do we think they should not be punished? Well, number one, and I would say, when I say the intuition could be mistaken, it could be mistaken about just the broad category. But let's look at the particular case. Why do many people think those who have chosen abortions ought not be punished? Well, number one, abortion is legal. They chose to do something legal. And it's not fair to punish someone for something that was legal when they chose to do it. We would say that it was legal, and they've been brought up in an environment where trusted medical professionals, trusted women's health advocates, and trusted politicians and government authorities tell them there's nothing wrong with what you're doing. So we would say the level of moral culpability is lowered for those who are involved. Second, there are cases for those who choose abortion where we would say that they may be coerced by their partners, even forcibly coerced. That's not all cases. There are probably many cases of women who freely choose abortion and the man involved is not even in the picture, or he protests the killing itself. So when we look at, well, should someone be legally punished for killing another human being? The answer is not yes, and these are how many years. The answer is, if they directly choose to kill an innocent human being, the answer is yes, and the amount of punishment depends on their intentions and the circumstances involved. For example, imagine two women who kill their husbands. One woman kills him to get his life insurance money. The other kills the husband because he is an abusive maniac who the police haven't been able to arrest or prove he's abusive, and she finally snaps out of fear for her own safety. In both cases, we would say, well, no, punishment, you know, killing human beings is wrong. You know, it's some kind of abuse that's below the level of what self-defense allows for killing. But we would see in circumstances, well, one killing is cold, premeditated, and malicious, and the other is done out of some kind of grave necessity, grave circumstances, so we may have lighter, less severe or more severe punishments. And that's the same with women who kill born children. A woman who kills her child to get a life insurance policy on him versus a woman who gives birth to a baby, you know, has some kind of psychological disassociative state and then dumps that baby in a dumpster. Many of those women are not given lengthy jail terms. They are given psychological help, and they're given other forms of punishment and rehabilitation. So the point I'm making on that is this. If we as a society believe it should be illegal to kill children, then those who choose to kill children, there ought to be some kind of punishment. And that punishment should not change because of the child's age. That's the point that I'm making. So the punishment may vary based on the psychological state of the person involved and other circumstances, but we shouldn't just say, well, the child was unborn, so they don't matter. That's not what we should do.
Which brings me to we have lots of viewers on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Periscope, and it brings me to a question. Actually, it's a very good segue. Nice job, Trent. Why does a person think of the unborn child is less than human? I think that's So Anonymous on YouTube says this: the fetus does not have the characteristics of a person. I believe in the rights of a person, therefore the fetus has no rights. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that argument would succeed if the arguer could prove an unborn human being is not a person. So person is a term in philosophy or in law that refers to an individual that has specific rights or moral worth. So, yes, there are many people, even many sophisticated philosophers, who put forward arguments saying the unborn child is certainly a biological human being, but they're not a person. They don't have rights. But, of course, my counter to that is, well, what is a person? My definition of a person would be an individual member of a rational kind. So remember, it's not about what you can do. It's about what you are that makes you valuable. So if you are a child, a toddler, a baby, embryo, or fetus, regardless of your level of development, if you're a member of the human family, you're a person. If there were aliens, you know, like Spock or Superman, every member of their rational kind would be a person. Even, you know, baby Superman in his little pod, you know, before he goes to Earth, or if he were, you know, unborn Superman, he would just be Kal-El, though, on Krypton. But yeah, I mean, you see where I'm going with.
Yeah, but I think it's Super Baby. I don't think it's Baby Superman.
Well,
I think you say Super Baby. Is that right? Or is it Baby Superman seems like...
Yeah, that would be...
You're mixing
you know,
life
we can
stages.
We could do a whole other show about that side. But the point of the matter is, individuals are a member of rational kind. Now, those who try to disqualify the unborn will say, well, they don't think or feel, and we saw that in the previous hour. They can't think like we do. They don't feel like we do. The problem is, when you start doing that, you either say you exclude humans, like infants who can't think like us. They're not persons anymore. Or if you say that feeling pain makes you a person, you include non-human animals, like rats or pigeons even. So really the most coherent view would be the what's called the rational substance view, the intrinsic property related to humans view. And there's more I can go about that, but I cover that in detail in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life. If that anonymous commenter on YouTube would like to read more about my position, they can find it in my book.
And it does seem that the circle of what we count as our species has gotten wider and wider over the years. And the first people who encountered, for example, Native Americans, there's this great debate in Europe, actually. Are they human like us? Or are they not? And of course, slave traders wanted to say no. But why would we have discovered that our species begins with conception. Science discovered that.
Yeah.
Why would we say, well, no, that part of our species is out when the whole trend.
Exactly. The mark of progress has always been that those who have been depersonalized because they are different, those verdicts were always wrong. And those human beings deserve to be treated with respect. Those who put that same verdict to the unborn, is that a verdict you really want to agree with?
I don't. Maybe that was a rhetorical question. We'll be right back with more. Hey, give us a call if you are pro-choice and you'd like to discuss it on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is! Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. In a series of short, easy-to-read chapters, Trent covers the whole range of common topics, starting with why we believe in anything at all, and answering all the common objections to the Catholic faith, both doctrinal and moral. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Better yet, it's only $3 a copy when you order in bulk. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tomorrow morning on EWTN Radio, More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popcheck. The Popchecks provide the resources and support needed to live a more abundant life, with regular guest segments to provide opportunities for interaction with some of the brightest and best voices in Catholic lay ministry. More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popcheck airs weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. And right after Catholic Answers Live today, The Journey Home. Jackie and Tim Oglesby will be the guests. He's a former Baptist, she's a former Methodist, right here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Trent Horn, our guest this hour on Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884 is the number. I forgot to give it out before I went on the last break. And if you are, in fact, a pro-choice person and would just like to discuss with us why you are pro-choice, 888-318-7884 is that number. I'll let you know again, though, that Trent's brand new book, Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love, that includes one chapter, Why We Protect Life, chapter by chapter, just a non-confrontational, friendly, even joyful presentation of why we believe each thing that we believe as Catholics. So it's very helpful to you, and I think it will be very helpful to you. Why We're Catholic, you can get it for $10 now at Catholic.com. Just go to Catholic.com, and for today it's on sale for $10. If you want to buy 20 copies and give them out to people, they're just $3 a copy. If you buy 20, that's $60 for 20 of those. 888-318-7884 is the number here. We go now to Jenny in Fullerton, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Jenny, your comment for Trent.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, Jenny. Yes, you are. You're on with Trent.
Yes. Well, I just recently came back to the church, to Catholicism, and I have I've always had this problem. It's very controversial for me, the whole thing about abortion, since I committed a lot of those in the previous, time in my life. I'm in my 40s, and I've done this before, and I've talked to a lot of women. I've, worked in the nursing aspect of this, and I've seen the struggles for many of the few women that have gone to have this done, but I've also seen also the other aspect of how easy society has made it for women to do this procedure, and how devastating it could be. I agree with a lot of the stuff that you guys have been talking about, but my confusion and my heart goes out to those, since I'm also in another field that includes therapy. My heart goes to those women who had no choice in the matter whatsoever from the moment of conception. And I'm talking about women who have been raped, who have been victims of incest, and also those with mental health that are, I'm talking about, I work with minors, and they're children. I'm talking about kids that come because grandpa did it, or kids that don't even have the knowledge of how to become a parent because they're mentally challenged. Yeah. And where do we draw the line in making them feel on top of, this is happening to me, why am I getting punished by raising something that reminds me of it every single day?
Jenny, that's a very, very clear question. So I want to make sure that before we go on further that Trent addresses that question. Where do we draw the line, Trent?
Yeah. Well, what I'd say, Jenny, is that in cases of rape or incest, and that would also include, you mentioned the cases of someone who is mentally undeveloped or suffers from some kind of mental disability, so they're unable to consent to sexual intercourse. So rape in that case, any kind of rape or incest, we could just say rape to subsume them all into one category, is a horrific crime against women. It's terrible and it's awful. And I firmly agree with that. And what we have is, if pregnancy occurs in the case of rape, we've got a situation where there's just no good alternatives, that they're all difficult and unfair, that a woman is forced to either have an abortion and kill her child, place her child for adoption, or raise a child she never planned on raising. She's forced into one of those three options, and she should never be forced into any of those. And it's also just really unfair for the child. So when this comes up, I like to remind people that in certain other countries, if a woman is raped, sometimes she's executed in an honor killing. Like, even in our country, people blame women who are raped. They say, well, what were you wearing, or how much were you drinking? And that's ridiculous. A woman, it's never, ever, ever a woman's fault if she is a victim of rape. Never, ever. So we should never blame a woman for being raped or punish her in any way. But we should also remember that the baby who comes into existence, it's never, ever his fault that he came into existence. So for me, I look at this and say, this is awful. What do we do? Well, let's take the harmful solution, the violent solution. Don't have a violent solution for the mother. Don't have a violent solution for the baby. We should only have a harmful solution for the man who caused the rape. He's the one who should be imprisoned. He's the one who should suffer harm, not the victims, who's the mother and the child. So I think, Jenny, you also brought up the point, well, what about her trauma? I've actually known women who have given birth to children who are conceived in rape, and they've found from these experiences that the children can actually be a source of redemption, that you see this beautiful baby who exists, and this baby just becomes an object of love. They just kind of swallow up the love from inside of you just because of who they are. Now, but the trauma of the rape will always be there. That's why therapy and mental help are going to be needed, regardless of what you choose. But we shouldn't take a violent solution towards the problem, towards the mother or child. So that's kind of how I look at it. What do you think of that approach?
But I think the percentage of the women that actually have the maturity to actually overcome all of those obstacles and love the baby, I believe it's very small compared to the ones that, you know, I believe I listen to you guys, and I'm very inspired to the comments that you guys say. But I know that also there's a lot of women that, I mean, you mentioned how devastating it is to have the abortion. I think it's also as devastating for a woman, even more so, when they are not forced, but kind of like take on the responsibility of carrying, you know, that person's baby. Oh, and I've seen it a lot. And I've seen suicides, you know, and women hurting themselves because of this. And a lot of them, the ones that I take care of, are teenagers. Mm-hmm. And so I could see the harm in also making them feel guilty. Oh, well, I have to give birth because, you know, the baby has to be born. And then, and before you go into that, because it's not the baby's fault, I know that you guys were talking about naming what's human, you know, in the sense of, like, it doesn't matter where the development comes from. And I know this is kind of reaching, but, you know, I mean, then if you want to really go back and back and back and back, you know, you can retrograde to, you know, sperm and egg, you know, and we get rid of those on a daily basis, I guess.
Okay. You know, so, well, Jenny, let me jump in on those two different points, but why I want to make sure that we get this settled out first before we move on. You can make a dividing line at conception that sperm and egg are not human beings. They are parts of human beings. Sperm has half the DNA genetic material of a man. Egg has half the genetic material of a woman. They are body parts. But when sperm and egg come together in conception, what you have is not a body part. You have a whole body. You have a new human being with a full set of chromosomes who is developing. So you have a new human being who comes into existence, will grow their own arms, legs, brain, sperm, or egg, and will continue to develop unless they die or they are killed. So there is a line that science has definitively drawn at conception where a new human being comes into existence. Second, I would say that I appreciate your concern for those who might be teenage mothers or others in difficult circumstances. You know, what about the trauma and difficulty of continuing a pregnancy and giving birth? I agree, very difficult. But what's the alternative? Especially in the case of rape, you have someone who's a victim of violence. There's trauma from that violence, but there's also trauma that is added when you make someone an accomplice to violence, that someone has to live with every day knowing that they consented and took part in ending their child's life. And so that has to be considered as well. So as I had said before, in difficult cases, when we have two options, a violent option and a nonviolent option, as much as possible, we should pick the nonviolent option. And we can in abortion because the child is not an aggressor coming at us to hurt us. They're a baby growing where they should be growing, who needs our love and our support. And their mother and father need our love and support as well. So since you've just come back to the faith and you have these kind of questions, I have the authority to do this, I think. I don't know. I might have the underside to do this. Jenny, I hope you'll stay on the line and our call screener will speak to you. So please stay on the line. I'd like to send you a copy of my new book, Why We're Catholic. Because if you've now just come back to the church, you may have lots of questions, you know, about, well, why do we do this? Why do we do that? I have problems with this, or I'm not sure about that. The book might help you a lot, so I'd like to send that to you. It's called Why We're Catholic. Please stay on the line, and our call screener will get your address, and we'll have a copy sent out to you. So do stay on the line, and I'd love to help you along with your journey and everything you're wrestling with.
Why are you pro-choice? That is our topic this hour. We have to take a quick break, and we will come back with more Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections has recently formed a partnership featuring a dual enrollment program with Franciscan University of Steubenville. Our website is homeschoolconnections.com. We are a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpo. In John 15:26, when Jesus promised the Advocate, he then warned the disciples that they would be expelled from the synagogues. The hour would come when they would be killed as an act of worship by ignorant people. Now, why does God allow this to be so? Why not have everyone be of an accepting mindset? But such is not God's design. He did not program us to be benign automatons. We can kill the apostles and the prophets who came before them. We can even persecute and put to death the Son of God. Who is this unfathomable being that he allows such evil to rear its wrath upon the sacred? He is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, who transcend the universe and yet are imaged in our very DNA. Because we know the Father and the Son, we revel in such mystery. The Spirit has indeed breathed on us. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. If you are pro-choice, we would love to hear from you. Our topic this hour, why are you pro-choice? Our guest, Trent Horn, the author most recently of Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love, but also the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, a full-length tome that's really helping a lot of people to understand the pro-life position and also to be persuasive in trying to share the pro-life position. But we're not looking for pro-life people to call today. We're looking for pro-choice people to call. We go now to John in Lafayette, Louisiana, listening on EWTN. John, your comment for Trent Horn.
So I wanted to ask about sort of the legality or to constitute how constitutional it is to impose anti-abortion laws on other people in the U.S. or I guess in my state for that matter. It is illegal to make court decisions or make or it's unlawful to make court decisions or laws based off of foreign law. And I see, the Bible, by its definition, is a form of foreign law. It's a moral code. And where I feel uncomfortable is where we start to impose biblical law on other people who really do not share the same sort of the same views. I don't want to argue about the morality of abortion because I have my own views, and morality is very subjective. It's like arguing, two people arguing whether a zebra is, white with black stripes or black with white stripes. It's all in the eye of the beholder, And I wanted to know your views on, do you think it's really right that we should be imposing our religious views on other people?
Okay, well, that's a great question. And I would say that if a view is imposed into the law, it simply must have a rational foundation. It can't be a purely sectarian view. So the Constitution in the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And so what that means is, how it's been interpreted over the years, is that the law, both at the state and federal level, should not establish a particular religion as being true, either demanding membership in that religion or people obeying that particular religion's precepts. So a law saying that everybody must attend church on Sunday would violate the First Amendment. And that's something I would agree would not be constitutional. However, just because a law has a biblical foundation, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have a rational foundation either. In fact, many of the biblical foundations are drawn from rational foundations about how humans ought to treat one another. For example, would you agree, what would you think of this argument? Our state does not have laws banning shoplifting because that would impose the commandment, thou shalt not steal, on other people.
Are you there? John, are you there with us, John?
John?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Did you hear that example I gave about shoplifting and thou shalt not steal?
I think that's a very, not a loaded example, but it's not of equivalence, because stealing, it's a shared value that all Americans have amongst each other. If it were me or a Muslim or this one, it's a agreed notion that we shouldn't steal to keep a stability in society, because it affects, if I were to steal from a Muslim or if a Muslim were to steal from me, you know, it's still hurting somebody of a different faith. And what I see with abortion is sort of like, let's say the abortion laws don't really affect Catholics because, like, you know, Catholics don't believe in abortion, therefore they're not going to get an abortion because they think it's wrong. However, how about for somebody who isn't a Catholic? If a person who isn't a Catholic receives an abortion, it's not going to directly affect the Catholic. It might be bad towards their moral view, but it won't directly affect the Catholic in any way.
But you're saying it'll affect somebody who might be, let's say, an atheist who thinks there's nothing wrong with abortion.
Yes, exactly. And what I'm trying to get across is that I think it's like, from my point of view, if you're Catholic and you don't believe in abortion, you shouldn't do abortion. You shouldn't go abort your child. But it's not my right to say what your moral code is, because when we extrapolate and make laws based off of moral code of, you know, biblical religious texts, we base them off of the notion of that they're shared values.
Well, John, let's take it a bit back. So the argument I make is actually not based on the Bible. In fact, the Bible doesn't actually talk about abortion. It doesn't mention abortion. My argument is actually based on shared values. It's based on the value that we shouldn't kill innocent human beings. Abortion directly kills innocent human beings. Therefore, abortion should be illegal. People disagree, though, about whether the unborn's a human being or whether they deserve to be protected under the law. So there's disagreement there. But are you saying we shouldn't pass a law just because lots of people disagree with it? For example, when we banned slavery or racial segregation, would you agree many people disagreed with those laws?
Yes, but what the thing is, banning such things of that matter wasn't a religious issue. It was more of a humanities issue. It was it had to do with people who are already developed and people who.
John, how is abortion a religious issue when the argument I gave you just now was not religious?
Because the whole notion of abortion being illegal. I mean, yeah, you could make that argument that, you know, from a non-religious stance, but I'm sure that if you weren't a Catholic, I don't think you would really. If your views of Catholicism, they influence your political views, and the political view that abortion should be illegal is heavily influenced by Catholics.
Actually, I was opposed to abortion before I became Catholic. I'm a convert to the Catholic faith, so that's not true in that sense. But let me add. I'm going to add another point before we have to move on. The idea that, well, if a law doesn't affect you, just let people develop their moral codes, and if it doesn't affect you, that's not a big deal. I guess I can just offer one more example and maybe hear your response. We can move on if we have time. Imagine, you know, 80 years ago, people were debating laws about child labor, about whether it was okay for a family to send their 5-year-old to work in a coal mine. And we now know that's terrible, that's abuse, you shouldn't exploit children in that way. But imagine someone saying, well, you know what, there's disagreement about whether it's okay to let children work. And if you don't like child labor, well, don't employ children, don't send your children to work. But if you don't have children even, well, it doesn't even affect you. So why would you even be involved? to me here, the case is, well, we should be involved because someone has to stand up for the children who are being exploited when no one else will. And that's the contention I'm making with abortion, in that even if saying, well, I'm not going to choose abortion, other people won't, the law isn't for me who's going to choose it. The law is to for people who will choose it. Martin Luther King was once asked about this, you know, should you change hearts or change the laws on racial, on racism? And Martin Luther King Jr., he said, well, laws don't change hearts, but they do restrain the heartless. So I would say just as we protect children from exploitation and child labor, we should protect unborn children from being dismembered by abortion. So I think that that's a fair comparison to make. If you disagree, definitely check out my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or call us back and we can continue that discussion. But we have limited time, so perhaps we could go to another caller and see if we can get everybody in before the end of the show. But thank you, John, for calling. I do appreciate your viewpoint.
All right, let's go to Bob in Golden, Colorado. Bob, why are you pro-life? Excuse me, pro-choice.
Well, I am for informed choice. And that is to say that, you know, it goes back to the Cal Thomas article I read about 15, 20 years ago, that 9 out of 10 who saw an ultrasound walk out. And that's basically based on information they received that they didn't have. And so I think a compromise in this, instead of advocating for the either extreme of pro-life or pro-choice, just getting to the point of saying that if people had the information, they wouldn't carry out and with the abortion. And therefore, you would have abortion becoming rare as the Democratic Party initially advocated for, a rare instance of this occurring.
Bob, we don't have a lot of time, so I want to let Trent respond to that.
Yeah. My response to that would be that there are states that have informed consent laws. I think there are many states where women have to read a pamphlet or be explained what the abortion procedure is. I am not aware, and I am extremely skeptical of the statistic, that 90% of women, when they read these pamphlets or hear these descriptions, choose to not have an abortion. I'm very skeptical of that because we don't see such low abortion rates per capita in the states that have these informed choice laws. So I would say that those laws are great. We should have them. But there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, that's a starting point. But then, you know, I mean, but then why not make it illegal to kill the child outright? I mean, that'd be like saying, well, instead of having laws against rape, we make men who want to rape women, well, we need you to read this pamphlet. It's going to tell you all the bad things rape does to women, and it's actually not good for you either. And so just read this, and then, you know, you can go on ahead. Now, in some cultures where, for example, let's say spousal rape is just prevalent and nobody thinks it's a big deal, you may have to start with some kind of an educational campaign first. You may have to do that before you can pass a law. But I would say the educational campaign, the informational campaign, is a means, not an end. The end is giving the legal protection for innocent human beings from acts of violence, whether it's rape, enslavement, torture, or homicide, including abortion. So I think that while it's noble to promote things that will reduce abortions, there's no reason to stop short and not move forward for full legal protection for unborn children. But I hope you'll give that some thought, Bob, and thanks for giving us a call.
Thank you very much, Bob. Why are you pro-choice is our topic this hour. Our guest is Trent Horn, the author of Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love. I got to get it in the camera there. Lots of folks watch. When I say camera, because folks are watching on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope, it does seem to me, Trent, that none of your arguments make sense at all unless you acknowledge that human life has a distinct beginning at conception. It seems like even Bob's point about educating and all that, it seems to hedge because it's in some way that unborn person is considered less than.
It's interesting, Si, that I've noticed that some people, even those who say they're pro-life, they think the unborn matter, but not as much as a born person. So they're willing to propose solutions to abortion
right.
for the unborn that they would never propose for born people. And I attribute that to our cultural brainwashing towards the unborn, that we all have to continually fight against, and I hope we all will, including our listeners today.
Trent, thank you for being a leader in that fight, helping us snap out of it a little bit, free us from that brainwashing. Thanks for being with us today, Trent.
Happy to be here.
Trent Horn, the author of Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love. Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum. Patrick Madrid will be in here for the first hour, Tim Staples for the second hour. We hope you'll join us then. We'll take any question you got on open forum. We're not selective. And you don't have to be Catholic to call. Remember that. You can be non-Catholic. You can be anti-Catholic. We'll see you tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.